You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only daily Miami Heat podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. The Heat traveled to the nation's capital on Sunday to face the Washington Wizards. Early in the season, Miami suffered one of their worst losses of the year to the Wizards and had a chance at redemption. They built a solid lead early on, but Washington was carried by Bradley Beal in the first half, looking every bit like an all-star, and Davis Bertans, and Miami's lead would cut to just three at the half, with Myers Leonard and Tyler Hero missing their 13th straight game, and Jay Crowder going through the team's concussion protocol after taking a Zion Williamson elbow to the face during Friday's loss to the New Orleans Pelicans. The shorthanded Heat suffered another blow when Jimmy Butler exited the game. I had seen when he was initially hurt, noticed him hobbling about, trying to shake it off, but he kept playing and I assumed it wasn't that big a deal. I believed it was his ankle, but the team later reported that he hurt his left toe somehow, that the ankle injury turned into a toe injury. Either way, Butler would finish the game with just 9 points, 0 rebounds, and 0 assists in 24 minutes of action. The third quarter was a back-and-forth affair, and Miami held on to a slim lead to start the fourth, but the Wizards would go on an 11-0 run to build an 8-point lead behind Shabazz Napier and others, and it looked bleak for the Heat until Bam Adebayo carried the team on his shoulders and just dominated to the end of the fourth quarter, helping Miami build a lead of their own that they would not relinquish. And the Heat end a 5-game losing streak on the road with a good win over the Washington Wizards. Miami improves their overall record to 41-23. They're currently 12 games back of the Milwaukee Bucks, who are in the first place, of course, in the Eastern Conference. But they're 1.5 to the Boston Celtics, 1.5 behind the Boston Celtics for the third seed in the Eastern Conference standings. Boston lost a 1-point game to the Oklahoma City Thunder at home. They're currently 2 games over the Indiana Pacers, who are in the 5th seed at 39-25, and 3 games over the Philadelphia 76ers, who are in the 6th seed. So Miami continuing to jockey position in the playoff race, but a big win for the Wizards overall. But the big story of the game, clearly, Bam Adebayo. No way around it. He was by far the biggest issue, biggest storyline of the game. A transcendent performance from him. Without Jimmy in the game, without a number of key players there, and with Adebayo not necessarily particularly aggressive in the first half, I saw a lot of people kind of hinting at this was his opportunity. This is the time for Bam to be a little bit more aggressive because there was no clear score here. Obviously, Duncan is a secondary scorer, even though he put up a number of points tonight, but somebody had to kind of take the lead, and you're watching the Heat drop a second game to a woeful Wizards team who are 23-40, 17 games under 500. Even with Bradley Beal there, they're not a very good team. And so you're wondering what's going on with this Heat team that's lost, 5 straight games on the road that continue to lose to bad teams in some way. And it's up to Adebayo to kind of take the game upon his shoulders and carry the team. And that's exactly what he did. He was incredible. They run the offense through him. He was aggressive. He was getting free throw calls in his favor. He was finishing shots at the rim. And if he wasn't finishing shots, he was dishing out to his teammates. I'll talk about that a little bit more. But he was such a factor late in the game. And the Heat don't win without him. And not just that, but they built a comfortable lead because of his incredible efforts. His aggression, I think, was inspirational. And so many of the players began to feed off of it. And he said it after the game that he did not want to be one of those mediocre road teams. And that's a phrase he's used before about this team that they can be mediocre. I think he's kind of parroting something that Eric Spoelstra said about the team earlier in the season, even before the All-Star break when they were going through their struggles away from the American Airlines Arena. And, Adebayo took it personally, and he did a fantastic job of carrying the team. Without Jimmy, without a number of key players who have carried the team at some point, you're not relying on Jay Crowder and his impact. You don't have Iguodala scoring a bunch of points yet. Somebody had to step up, and Adebayo took that challenge, and he responded beautifully. So fantastic night from him. Finished with 27 total points and 9 of 13 shooting to go with 14 rebounds and 6 assists along with one block. He also had 5 turnovers, so he took some chances earlier in the half, in the first half in particular. But overall, an incredible experience. watching him become a kind of superstar, at least for one night. I'm not sure how sustainable it is, but it was a fantastic performance from him. A little story of the game was Duncan Robinson, who continues to be a huge factor for Miami, particularly in victories. He finished with 23 points on 8 of 12 shooting. He actually had a shot attempt outside three-point range in the mid-range area, and he was a nice layup in the game where he actually showed some real versatility there on a fast break opportunity, a little show and go, where he kept the ball to himself and wound up finishing a layup over a defender. That's when Miami was building their early lead to start the game. Other than that, all 11 of his shot attempts were from behind the arc, and he hit 7 of those, so another incredible shooting performance from him. He also finished with 7 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 2 blocks. So Duncan playing some good defense. He had a nice block shot on Bradley Beal, if I'm not mistaken. Really good effort from him, and he continues to be a really, really good player. I'm not sure how sustainable this is, but we're seeing a version of Duncan that we had not seen prior to the All-Star break. His shooting has been phenomenal. He's been an incredible factor. He is Miami's third best player, behind Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. As great as Crowder's performances have been, as much as we've needed Goran Dragic off the bench to be a star and a really, you know, ignitable part of the Miami's offense, Duncan has been the guy who's carried the team in many stretches there, who's bailed them out. Something that we were looking at with Wayne Ellington a couple of years ago. I remember when they didn't have a clear go-to scorer, they were doing just enough defensively to kind of hold opponents to within a 5-point deficit or something like that, or whether they were in a deficit or the team or the opponents were in a 5-point deficit. And then when they needed just enough offense, they'd bring Wayne Ellington there to kind of boost the team and put them over the hump. They're kind of doing the same thing with Duncan, but it's a lot more sustainable and through most of the game. Like, he hit his first 3-point attempt and he just continued it on from there. So, tremendous game from Duncan, and a big story for him in his own right. Unfortunately, it's going to get overshadowed because of Bam Adebayo's incredible performance, but Duncan had another huge night, and he continues to be a major factor for Miami. Another takeaway of the game, my first of three, Kendrick Nunn had a big game himself. He did finish with 18 points on 7 of 17 shooting. He had 29 minutes of play. He was big down the stretch as well. Had a couple of nice shots there, and was willing to do the work. Defensively, he still struggled at times. Got a question from my coworker over at Locked On Marlins about whether or not Nunn has any value outside of his scoring. And it's a good and valid point that I've made a number of times before. His defense is still suspect. His passing is virtually non-existent, although he is a capable passer. And, you know, without any other facet of his game being something you can count on consistently, if he's not scoring, what's the hope? What's the expectation for Kendrick, and why is he getting those kinds of minutes if he's not going to be a major factor? But tonight, at least, his scoring was on par, and that's exactly what you're hoping for him. Solomon Hill had his best game of the season. The broadcast team spoke about Eric Spoelstra kind of being encouraged by the work that Solo's done off the court and in practice, and that's the right language that Spoelstra has used a number of times. He used it about Deion. He used it about James Johnson. He used it about Kelly Olynyk. It's about the work that you put in afterwards. But the reality is that with Crowder out of the lineup and with Iguodala still trying to pick his spots as far as where he can be most effective, and with Jimmy losing time tonight, Solomon was going to get some minutes anyway. It's still a good performance. I mean, he went in there and had some big moments, particularly defensively. I was actually kind of impressed by how good his defense was, because he had some nice stretches there where he played some pretty solid defense. He finished with 5 points, made one of his 3-point attempts. So, you know, solid shooting night for him, but, you know, not really much of a factor offensively. 30 minutes overall, probably more a factor because of the injuries and the fact that, you know, you had to bring some wing defender in there eventually. And so Solomon Hill was the only one who was available, and it made a lot of sense, and he played pretty well. Bradley Beal. Another takeaway, this time on the Wizards side of the ball, was that Bradley Beal struggled. I'll talk about him a little bit more in the third segment, because he made some recent comments that are worth pointing out, particularly in context of Miami. He had a huge first half, looked really, really solid. His shooting was incredible. He was driving to the rim, very, very aggressive. And then in the second half, I believe he missed almost, he was 1 of 11, I think that was the statistic there. Finished 8 of 24 overall. 5 of 14 from 3-point range, so almost 33% shooting from 3-point range, 33% overall, from the field, and, you know, a 6-assist night, so a good night from him because he had 23 points. Those are big numbers. He is one of the top scorers in the league, but at the same time, translated into a bad loss, and he struggled in the second half. So it's interesting to see that he would go through these kinds of issues. But either way, Miami was really focused on him defensively, and they did a good job in the second half. Everybody from Derrick Jones Jr. to Duncan to Kendrick Nunn to Bam Adebayo, I think, and Jimmy Butler, of course, all had their opportunity to try and lock up Bradley Beal, and they did a fairly good job, particularly in the second half. Let's move on. I'll answer some of your listener questions and go over some more notes about the game. You're listening to Locked On Heat. When you start your hiring process, you may have some questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes, use screener questions to help create your short list of applicants, all that fast. Also, you add skills tests to your job post so you can be confident in your applicants' abilities. Their library of more than 50 skills tests ranges from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team, such a crucial part of any hiring process. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/lockedon. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. Let's kick off the second segment by talking about what everybody else is talking about after tonight's game, and that's Bam Adebayo. Fantastic performance, something I hinted at in the first segment, and just truly inspirational. But I didn't realize how impactful he was when I looked at the score sheet and just started doing going through the play-by-play there of that last 9.5 minutes of play after Shabazz Napier put the Wizards up 8, and you're seeing this lead slip away, and you're seeing this game probably result in a loss, just as we have so many times during the course of the season. And Bam scored or assisted on all of Miami's 25 remaining points. So with the Heat down 83-75 with 9 minutes and 24 left in the game, Bam went on an incredible personal run where he assisted or scored all 25 of Miami's remaining points in order to get them a 100-89 victory over the Washington Wizards. It's just truly phenomenal. And here's the breakdown. He had a layup to cut the lead to 5. Then he assisted on a Duncan three-pointer. He hit 2 free throws. He assisted on a Kendrick two-point shot. He hit a layup of his own. On one possession, he got fouled, hit 2 free throws. On another possession, next one, he got fouled, hit 1 of 2 of those free throws. So that's 14 points so far that he's contributed in one way or another. Then he assists on a Kendrick three-pointer. He assists on 2 straight Duncan three-pointers and then 2 more free throws by Bam. 25 points, all of which Bam had a hand in. Unbelievable. And that's just, look, it's 9.5 minutes. I guess if you do a per 36 stretch over that, it's still a pretty good ratio there. But 11 points, 5 assists during that stretch. If you extrapolate that over per 36 minutes, excuse me, you're looking at basically multiplying that by 4. His per 36 averages would be 44 points and 20 assists per game. So that kind of shows you the kind of incredible impact that he had during that stretch. Just truly unbelievable. It's not to mention he pulled down a couple of rebounds, had some top-notch defense as well. The momentum shifted so completely during that stretch when he was just aggressive. And I think that's what's been missing from him. You know, we haven't seen that from him. He's been so confident and capable in being a workhorse, the guy who does the little things, that kind of just picks up everybody around him, makes plays, doesn't have to dominate in any one glaring way. This was the exact opposite of that. He said, "Know what? Forget it. I can't see this game resulting in a loss. I'm carrying this team somehow." And he did that by getting to the line, by getting shots up at the rim, by assisting and finding those teammates on the perimeter who were capable of knocking down shots. And he did such an incredible job. I mean, there's no way around it. It was a superstar turn for him and a fantastic moment. Nice to see that he was able to do it. Not sure. I don't want to be the fly in everybody's soup, but at the same time, I'm not sure how likely it would be when Jimmy's out on the floor. Jimmy said some really nice things about Bam after the game, said he was a max-level player, said he was the best player on the team. I'm not sure, it's hard to say exactly with Jimmy whether or not he's being 100% sincere, whether or not he's just tweaking guys. I mean, the max level player, he's trying to get his boy paid, and that's perfectly understandable. That's a lot of what a lot of guys do in the league, and it's perfectly appreciated, I think, from everybody to try to help you get paid. You know, I think everybody's happy with each other chasing after the bag and getting it any way you can. But at the same time, I think there's a shred of truth to it. Like, a lot of what Jimmy says, it's some tweaking, it's some trolling, but there's enough truth to it to make sense. And I think he does actually think that Bam is the leader of this team, at least in some way. If not vocally, if not even productionally, Bam is the guy who kind of sets a template as far as your work ethic and your dedication and things of that sort, which is saying something because Jimmy is right up there with all-time greats. So I'm not sure how much you can read into it, but it's a fun statement, and it's a perfect game to kind of drop that little nugget there from Jimmy. So with him out of the lineup, definitely wants to make sure that Bam understands how impactful and important a game he had. So good night from him overall. Some of your questions here. This one comes from Jay Folk Hip, who asks, Jay Crowder, Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, Myers Leonard, should they rest before the playoffs, or should Miami try to maintain home court advantage, presumably by getting them to play a little bit? So that's a big question there. I think, for one, Crowder should probably be back within the next game or two. Miami's off until Wednesday the 11th when they come back home and they face the Charlotte Hornets. So it's not a huge game, but it's a home game against a bad team, and you try to win it as best as possible. I would imagine, unless there's some lingering effects there, that Jay will probably be out on the floor on Wednesday night if he's available. So I'm not too worried about him. As far as trying to rest him individually before the game, before the playoffs, I don't think that's likely. He's injured. It's a fluke. You don't want to exacerbate it. You don't want to have him have any kind of lingering issues. You remember what happened with Justice Winslow when he took a huge shot from Paul Millsap. I don't know if the situation is the same. I'm not a doctor. I'm not the team doctor. I'm not evaluating Crowder and comparing him to Justice Winslow. I'm sure that Jay will be out on the floor as soon as he's available, and hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later. I don't think they want to rest him, though, because he's already spoken about the transition he's made to becoming more comfortable in the offense, about understanding how his teammates want the ball in certain places, about playing alongside those guys, about being able to respond to a more veteran-filled team than the team he played with in Memphis. And that kind of growth, I think, is personally more important than getting this kind of rest during the last 20 games of the season. So I would imagine that Crowder plays. As far as Butler's concerned, him, I could see resting as much as possible, just because you're going to rely on him during the fourth quarter. And I don't think Jimmy's been 100% at any point this season. He's had a couple of nicks and bruises here and there, and he started off the season obviously missing a few games due to the birth of a daughter. But, you know, he's going through so much. He's gone through so much, both on and off the court, that I think it's probably better to rest him if possible. So we'll see what happens with this toe evaluation after the game. He didn't seem to think that it was going to be a lingering long-term issue. So if you explore the possibility of him resting, I mean, why not rest him against the Charlotte Hornets? You probably don't need him out there, especially at home. I would imagine that Jimmy probably misses the next game, and we'll see what happens from there. Tyler and Myers, them, however, because they've already missed over a month of action, if I'm thinking about this correctly, I mean, they were out right before the All-Star break, which was on the, I think the last game that they played before the All-Star break was the 12th. So it's been about a month since they've been off. They're rested. At this point, it's more important to get them back into playing shape rather than getting them into more resting shape. You know, both of them are extremely fit, and Myers is going to do all the work he possibly can without having to put any pressure on his foot or ankle. But at the same time, you kind of want to go out there, get a little bit more experience. I know they're both very excited and eager to go back onto the floor. And I think that's more important. So, Jay Folk, I think that, honestly, this team is never going to rest guys anyway like that. I mean, they didn't do it during the Big Three era. They've never done it at any point in time. If you can go out there and play and you're not risking anything and you're not risking any long-term injury, which I don't think any of these guys are at risk to do so should they get in over the next month or so, you play them. And I think that's just a reality. So he also asks, has your win-loss prediction changed? Couple days ago, last week actually, during the second part of a weekly mailbag, I looked at the rest of the Heat schedule. They were 39-22, I believe, at that point. Now they are 41-23, so they've gone 2-1 over the last three games. And I had kind of predicted over those 21 games that they would go 13-8 and that they would wind up with a final record of 52-30. I don't see any reason why they can't go 11-7 over the next few eight games. They've got a lot of games at home, but a lot of those games at home are against tough opponents, Denver, Oklahoma City, etc., teams that can win on the road. They're not all like Miami that can't win on the road. And so I wouldn't count on Miami being able to win all of those home games just because they're at home. I'm still confident in my win-loss prediction. As I mentioned at the time, it's higher than I expected at the beginning of the season, but it's still a pretty good one. Dakota Dryden asks, who gets the money this summer, Derrick Jones Jr. or Duncan Robinson? And then Yuli asks a kind of similar question. He says, how can the Heat get Duncan under contract for the longest time possible? He's already special and about to be super special. I think he's already set the super special, to be honest with you, Yuli. But as far as your question and Dakota's question before, Derrick Jones Jr. is a free agent. Duncan Robinson is not. He's actually under contract for another year, next season, the 2021 season. And he's going to be paid $1.66 million during that stretch. So he will be, just as Hassan Whiteside was a few years ago, I think Duncan will probably be the best value contract in the league, a guy who shoots 42% from three-point range, who averages about 15 points per game and about 25 to 30 minutes per game, who continues to improve because he has that sharp basketball IQ, because he has all the tools to be a good defender, because he has all the tools to be a good passer, and he's already shown a lot of that. So Duncan is by far going to be the more valuable of the two players. As much as I like Derrick Jones Jr., and I think that he's made some incredible improvements, particularly defensively, and to develop his three-point shot as well, I don't think he'll ever be as impactful a player. He's not going to be the kind of shooter that Duncan is. And so until he becomes a more reliable offensive threat, he'll just be a one-way player with potential on the other side of the ball. Duncan, however, is a fully realized threat, and as such, he's going to get paid a lot of money. So we don't have to worry about paying him this summer, however. It's going to be the following summer, and that's when he's going to get paid a lot of money. Him and Bam Adebayo both will be eligible, I think, for long-term extensions when they enter free agency. I think Bam's will be a restricted free agency. Duncan's will not. So he'll be an unrestricted free agent, and he'll be able to collect as much money as possible. And look, I'm sure that Duncan is happy in Miami. I'm sure that Duncan is appreciative of the Heat front office and coaching staff doing all due diligence and making sure that he is as well prepared as possible, getting him to his game at another level. But, you've got to chase your money when you can get it. And if he's got the opportunity to get paid elsewhere, and that's assuming that next year he is as impactful a player, that he is healthy, that he stays healthy, and that everything continues to develop in some way. He can't just go out there and be a one-year fluke. He has to continue to build on what he's showing this season, as impossible as that might seem right now. And so he's gonna look at other teams. He's gonna be wooed out there. He's gonna meet with other suitors. And if somebody throws more money than Miami, why wouldn't Duncan take it? Especially if they're chasing Giannis Antetokounmpo, they may not be able to throw that kind of money at Duncan Robinson. So we've seen it before. It'll happen again. I'm not sure that Miami will be able to pay Duncan, especially if they're going after Bradley Beal or Victor Oladipo or Giannis Antetokounmpo. They'll shift how they play. They'll shift the style of the offense. They'll evolve, as they often do. And I mean, Eric Spoelstra loves those challenges. He's been thriving trying to get Duncan Robinson to become a more versatile and potent player, and he's done a hell of a job in that regard. And he'll adjust again. And if that means getting a third big or a third, superstar, he'll do that, because he did it again during the Big Three era. So he knows how to make constant adjustments as a coach, how to change the offense, tweak it to fit your personnel. And so I think Miami is not going to be held hostage by Duncan Robinson. They're going to do everything they can to offer him as much money as possible. And Duncan will have a choice to accept it. We'll see what happens. I'm going to talk about Bradley Beal, free agency, and much more in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. to subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So I kind of wanted to dedicate this section to Bradley Beal a little bit, because you can't play the Wizards and not have Beal come up as, you know, just a talking point, just because he is a player that is on Miami's radar, that he is on Miami's fans' radar. There is so much kind of projection about where Bradley Beal might wind up if he does request a trade, or if he does leave the team in free agency. In a first-person story written for The Undefeated, Bradley Beal actually spoke about his free agency and his own role in Washington. He says, this is his story, and he wrote his first person, he says, "I couldn't care less about the numbers." That he's disappointed. You know, he's happy with his own numbers, but he's disappointed in another area, which is winning. That he's a winner, and that his teammates know that he is, and that he wants to be a winner in Washington. "Wanting to have my jersey retire in Washington one day played a factor in me re-signing." So he's talking about the fact that he signed a 2-year extension this past summer that kept him from being traded at the trade deadline. "For me, I look at Kobe, I look at D. Wade, I look at Dirk, UD, how they can stay in one situation for a long time. I hate change. If it happens, it happens," meaning if it's out of his control because the team trades him, that's not up to him, it's one thing. "But if I can control it," he continues, "I will finish my career in D.C. So he also points out to being like Damian Lillard, who wants to win in Washington, that he thinks it'll be more meaningful to build a team up from a bad team, from a team that missed the playoffs a few years, and to continue to win there. And then he says, "Yeah, I can go to Boston. I can go to Toronto. I can go to Miami. I can go everywhere everybody wants me to go. But what would that look like? It wouldn't necessarily be my team to where now I'm in a situation in Washington where I'm being built around." So in the piece there, he kind of hints at wanting to be the foundational piece for the team. So I'm not sure, you know, it's been so long since John Wall's been an impactful player that he's been hurt. You know, he's missed for so many, I mean, almost 2 years now. I mean, I can't recall the last time John Wall actually played meaningful basketball. And as a result, Brad has been the go-to player. He's been the foundational player in Washington, but I'm not sure that they're necessarily building around him either. So this kind of seems a little delusional, a little off. Maybe just lip service that he's delivering to the team and the team's fans as they continue to struggle through another losing season. I mean, I think there's no question at this point that Bradley Beal is the better player between him and John Wall. But John Wall is the one who's getting paid, and he's getting paid a lot because he was at one point the foundational player, not Bradley Beal. Beal was the second guy they brought on because they drafted him in the lottery. And so, you know, now he's saying he's the guy. He's the one that is built, you know, the team is being built around in Washington. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I also don't think that matters as much as he thinks it does. You know, they could still trade him if they wanted to. And if he is the foundational piece, what does that matter? I mean, they could still wind up building a bad team around him. Is that what he wants? Does he want to continue losing just so he can be the foundational piece? Like, Washington fans are all kind of wiping the sweat off their brow and being so relaxed and cavalier about this and saying, "Hi, you see, he wants to be a part of the Wizards team." It's like, yeah, that's great. But I mean, for how long is he going to want to be a part of this team if they continue to lose the way they have over the past few years? You know, there's no guarantee that they're going to get better. And so I don't know if Bradley Beal means everything he's putting in this piece. I don't think the fans realize how tenuous that all is, that he could request a trade tomorrow. I will say that after the game, we saw footage of Bradley Beal talking about both Eric Spoelstra and complimenting him and saying that he appreciates how Spoelstra gets the team ready under any circumstance. And he also said that Bam Adebayo was an incredible specimen and a hell of a player. Conversely, Bam Adebayo wore a Bradley Beal jersey after getting out of the shower in the Miami Heat locker room. So that's a pretty bold statement right there, I think, on a night when Bam completely dominates your team, to go and wear that jersey like that. That's a bold move. If that's a recruiting move, that's a fantastic way to take advantage of that opportunity from Bam Adebayo. He just clearly light years ahead as far as you know, like what Golden State's owner was fond of saying. I'm not sure that Bradley Beal is going to stay for the rest of his career in Washington. I still think that Miami would, I think Miami will pursue him if it's possible. And I think he's a really great fit in Miami. You know, what would you be willing to give up for Bradley Beal? Like, I mean, you'd shift Jimmy to the three. That means that Duncan is out. Maybe you can't afford to pay him anyway. You would probably have to trade Tyler Hero. Maybe Kendrick Nunn. I don't know. I'm not sure what it would take in order to pry Bradley Beal away. But either way, the players that you currently have on the roster wouldn't get any kind of playing opportunity when you acquire Beal. So it's saying a lot. I mean, look, I know that Beal is still a superstar. And kind of in context of what's happened tonight and with the recency bias of seeing seeing Duncan Robinson just continue to torch teams from the perimeter, it's hard to say that I'd be willing to trade Duncan Robinson in order to acquire Bradley Beal. But I'm kicking myself for saying that, because obviously you go after a superstar whenever possible. And I think Beal clearly is that type of player. We've seen him become incredible from key stretches of the game where he shoots the ball incredibly well. He's explosive. He can get to the rim. He gets the superstar calls to get to the line. He's a much better player. And that's just the reality. That's not to say that Duncan can't get to some level approximating where Bradley is right now, but for now, Bradley Beal is a better player, and if you can acquire him some way, somehow, you do whatever is necessary to do so. The Heat are off until Wednesday, but I'll continue to record shows over the next couple of days. The Miami Heat are at a charity event on Monday night. I'll be there to cover the event. Maybe I'll record a show from there or afterwards, kind of giving my thoughts on the team and everything that's been going on lately. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil, signing off, and thank you, as always, for your support. Yeah! Wrap it up, B.